Well, good morning to all of you. And since my bio hasn't been distributed, I'll give you the story of my life, what I've been doing. First of all, I want to say I was born in Mound Bayou, Mississippi. There were six of us in my family, five boys and one girl. I grew up in Ashland, Kentucky. Went to elementary school in Ashland, Kentucky, and of course, back in the 30s, schools were segregated in the South. I went to high school in Ironton, Ohio. Now, Michigan doesn't know too much about Southern Ohio, but you may have heard of DT and I Railroad. Henry Ford built the railroad from Detroit through Toledo down to Ironton to bring out iron ore for his River Rouge plant to make steel. I went to college at Hampton Institute when I went. It's now Hampton University in Hampton, Virginia. I did my master's degree at University of Detroit. Now, about flying and the military, I'm going to talk about the attitude of the country back in the 30s and what even Washington was talking about. When I was at Hampton, by the way, I graduated in 1941. In 1940, the edict came out that all red-blooded Americans report to the draft board. Well, I think my blood was red, so I had to report to the draft board. Well, we weren't at war at the time, so they deferred me till I graduated. Well, after I graduated, 1941, as you know, we were at war. So I went home to Ashland. And by the way, Ashland's claim to fame, if it has one, Ashland Oil's headquarters was there for a while, but they moved to Lexington, Kentucky. I guess Ashland was too small for them. Well, I didn't want to be drafted, because actually, if you're drafted, you were put where they wanted you to go, where they needed people. Well, I was fortunate enough that I escaped the draft board, and I saw the notice that you could become an aviation cadet. I took the test. By the way, this was in Virginia. I was only black that took the test. When I walked in, all the whites looked at me as though, what in the world is he doing here? By the way, the General Hap Arnold was head of the Army Air Corps, and he made the statement, as long as he was the general, blacks would never fly for the United States. With the efforts of Eleanor Roosevelt, Senator Truman, he was a senator at the time, the black press, Chicago Defender, Pittsburgh Courier, and the Amsterdam News, they put pressure on Washington to let blacks learn how to fly. I'm going to back up a little bit. In the 1940, we weren't at war, but the United States knew, in Washington, they knew that the airplane was going to play an important part in whether we win the war or not. But they couldn't train them in the military. So, you know, down in Washington, they can do what they want to when they want to do it. They'll find a way. So they said, we'll train them in the colleges and universities. And Hampton was one of the colleges that was training pilots. About 50 of us went through the training. Two young ladies went through, got their pilot's license. By the way, I had my pilot's license before I had my driver's license. I didn't say I didn't drive, but it wasn't legal. Finally, they said, well, after the newspapers and Eleanor Roosevelt and Truman got on their case, they said, well, they can't fly anyway, so let's just build a $2 million for a field down in Tuskegee, Alabama, and then they'll shut up because they can't fly, so then they'll shut up. We'll be through with it. Well, they got the biggest shock in their lives. I was out a year after I took the exam before they called me, and we went down to Tuskegee. Now, Tuskegee ran the primary program, all blacks. The course was divided into two parts, ground school and flight school. You had to solo within 10 hours. By the way, all the instructors in primary were black. In fact, the matter is, I could have stayed out of the war if I had chosen to become an instructor down at Tuskegee. But being young and full of vinegar, you know, whatnot, I wanted to fly fighter planes. So I did not take advantage of that. The program was in three parts, and I'm not going to talk about the basic because I didn't see any point in it. And later, they canceled it anyway. But primary, half a day you went to ground school and half a day you went to flight school. And you had to solo within 10 hours. Now, most of the cadets washed out in primary. Now, my youngest brother washed out because he couldn't land that PT-17. It was a tricky plane to land. See, he couldn't land it, so he washed out. Now, contrary to what the movie has about you going back home, no, that didn't happen. You were in the Army after you passed that exam, and you stayed in the Army. They just shipped you to somewhere else, and my youngest brother ended up in India as a clerk for some outfit in India. If you were successful in primary, you went over to the base, things changed drastically. You had all white instructors. And the discipline was a little more difficult. As I said, I'm not going to talk about basic training. I didn't see any point in it, really. Then we're going on to advanced training, and that's when we flew the AT-6. The first airplane that we flew that had guns on it. Now, if you're a fighter pilot, you have to have guns to fight. And this was the first airplane that had one machine gun on it. Then you had to have training for the target, aerial target and the ground target. They had a person with a long cable and a long sleeve for the aerial target. Now, that pilot that flew that, his life was in jeopardy, really. You coming in there and shooting at that sleeve, and you might hit him. Well, in any case, this is the training we had for aerial target. Then we went down to another field in Florida to do ground targets. If you were successful in finishing advanced training, then we went into what was known as transition. We flew the P-40. I saw a P-40 over at the other hangar over there, and the thing about the P-40, the landing gear was close together, and when you landed, it had the prop with the torque tend to want to make it turn. So you really had to be on your P's and Q's to keep the thing straight. It was a difficult airplane to land. We got about 10 hours in the P-40. When we graduated, you were given your rating, which was pilot rating. My class was the last class that was all fighter pilots. The succeeding classes were half fighters and half bombers. And you were given your rank as second lieutenant. After the transition, the group, the 332nd group was formed, and we went up to Selfridge Air Force Base, Selfridge Army Air Base, to get overseas training. We were introduced to the P-39 at Selfridge Air Force Base. Now, I don't know how, I very, very seldom see a P-39. I was just talking to some people, and I said maybe I would see one up here, but I haven't seen one. I don't know why they ignore it, but I don't see P-39s. Now, the P-39 was different, very different from your average plane. The engine was behind the pilot, and they had a shaft that ran between the pilot's legs up to the nose for the propeller, and in this, through the nose, there was a 37-millimeter cannon. And the space that would take up the engine was taken up to put the shells for the cannon. It had tricycle landing gear, easy to land. It had disc brakes. Now, we think disc brakes, was real modern for automobiles, but they had disc brakes back in the 30s. On the P-39. However, they did not have the same material on these brakes as they have today. They had metal, and you did not stand up on the stop, you tap it. One of the pilots came in kind of hot, and he stood up on the brakes, and they melted, and then plane stopped. They had to come out and tow it in. No one told me about the characteristic of the 39 when I got ready to fly the P-39. And I went out, got in it, and I'm going down the runway. I look at the airspeed. It says 50. Okay, things are cool. Went up to 60. Things still cool. Went up to 75. They weren't so cool. And when it got to 80, I'm still on the ground. And the fence is down right down there. I knew I couldn't stop. So I said, it's now or never. I pulled back on the stick and shot up like a rocket. No one told me the difference between, say, the P-40 or the AT-6 or Stearman was different than the P-39. Other thing about the P-39 was, do we have any General Motors people that work General Motors or officials of General Motors? Well, I'm gonna say this anyway. The engine had a habit of throwing a rod. Well, not all of them, because I flew them and didn't throw one I was flying, but throw a rod. Now, with the rudder and the elevators in the back, the controls went back. When it threw a rod, it cut those controls, and you didn't have control of the plane, and it crashed.